Ronald Reagan's authorized biographer Edmund Morris joins us now from his home in Connecticut. Good morning, Mr. Morris.
Good morning.
We just heard in Pam Fessler's story, you're saying that there was no question that Nancy loved Ronald Reagan with a consuming passion, that she was the ideal wife to look after a great man in the twilight of his life. They indeed had a warm and close relationship that was almost a symbol of the Reagan White House. Can we talk just a little bit more about the practical side of Mr. Reagan's presidency? He was a charming man. He was a personable man, but a lot of people portrayed him as a rather shallow thinker and not very curious about the world that he so influenced. Was that your sense of him as president?
No, he was culturally shallow, you could say. But politically and philosophically, he was a very deep man who in his youth was distinguished for the fact that he was voraciously interested in the ways of the world and read and absorbed as much information as any human being can absorb, to such an extent that in his 30s and his 40s, he was known around Hollywood as something of a motor mouth who just could not stop talking about world affairs. With such expertise that when he went to Washington for the first time shortly before World War II, he astonished one of the editors of the Washington Post with his detailed knowledge of the situation in Finland. So all of the myriad underestimators of Ronald Reagan conveniently forgot the fact that he was a very well-informed man.
He was someone who steadfastly held to certain ideas, free markets, opposition to communism, the role of government being small, the issues of human rights. Were those beliefs, you think, a visceral part of the man or just an integral part of the man's political image?
Oh, they were visceral in the real sense. They came right from his gut. His opposition to big government, for example, derived right from his youth when he saw his own father in the early 1930s being dispossessed from his job as a welfare administrator in Dixon, Illinois, by a bunch of federal welfare people who came in representing the Roosevelt administration and began to conduct affairs in Dixon from the center of power in Washington. They did so with such bureaucratic excess that he developed a revulsion against distant, centralized government, which stayed with him the rest of his life.
Early in his life, Ronald Reagan was a union official. He was president of the Screen Actors Guild. He was a supporter of causes that people might characterize as liberal, but by 1964, he was at the Republican National Convention to endorse Barry Goldwater for president. What was it that caused the transformation in Ronald Reagan?
Well, it was during that period as a union official. He was passionately interested in the affairs of the Screen Actors Guild and was its president in Hollywood for 7 years. And during the course of his presidency, he had to deal with militant unions, craft unions in Hollywood, who were dominated by and controlled by communist agitators, secret operatives who made no bones about physical threats, including one to Reagan himself, where he was threatened with acid in his face if he didn't desist from his rather conservative policies as union leader. He was perceived in those days as something of a stooge of the studios. He represented management. But if one looks at the record carefully, one sees that he actually was a very democratic leader of the Screen Actors Guild, in that the vast majority of the membership supported him. But it was his revulsion against the anti-democratic tendencies of communist agitators in the late 1940s that turned him, and he became, for the rest of his life, a devout anti-communist crusader.
You wrote about the changes in Ronald Reagan following the shooting in 1981 that nearly took his life. What were the physical and mental effects of that incident?
Well, we must remember that he was at the very point of death, having lost almost 50% of his blood supply. In some, by some accounts, he lost even more. and the trauma to his system, he was a septuagenarian then, of course, was immense. Even though his system was a splendid system and he recovered from it with amazing speed, he was cutting pike dives that very same summer after being nearly killed. It changed him spiritually and slowed him down. He became much more fatalistic, convinced that he was president for reasons of perpetrating the American Constitution and serving God, and he felt that God had spared him to take up his sword against communism, international communism. And he concentrated much more on essentials after that, spacing himself, knowing that he was an aging man, not concerning himself with petty bureaucratic details, just concentrating on the large philosophical problems that he stood for.
Of course, he did have an acting career before he became a politician, and he was often criticized for doing little more than playing the role of being president. Do you think that's a fair portrayal?
Well, it's we must understand we are talking about an actor who was born an actor, even as a child and as a teenager. He was obviously a man of the stage. He loved being looked at. He loved performing. He took direction. But the paradox about Ronald Reagan is that he was, through those same early years, also a really passionately dedicated political animal. And the actor and the politician fused very early on. So what he did in the White House was often theatrical. He understood that theater is a large part of power. But it had a strong ideology behind it. And the things he did so dramatically were always philosophically driven.
If he took direction in the White House, who was the director?
It depended on the circumstance. He took direction in the boring bureaucratic details of the presidency. One of the dirty secrets of the presidency is that 80% of the job is very, very dull. It's endless handshaking and listening to deputations and delegations and formalities. And Reagan did all that side of the presidency with great grace, but he was quite happy to do it when and how his advisors recommended. But on matters of substantial policy, anti-communism, anti-corporatism in government, anti-abortion policies, things like that which were controversial in his presidency, nobody could shake him and nobody could influence him, not even his own wife.
You know, it was interesting to look at different presidents after they've been elected, and they seem to age rather rapidly and be drained by the job. Hair goes gray. Yet President Reagan often seemed invigorated by, well, you could call it performing the duties of the presidency. But he was also capable of making jokes about himself. I think he once referred to burning the midday oil. Do you think he was rather lackadaisical about the responsibilities of the presidency?
No, he was a very dogged, conscientious person. One cannot read through every page of his diaries, which he kept every night of his presidency, and not appreciate the fact that he was, I use the word again, dogged. He worked solidly and consistently all through his presidency. His pace was not particularly fast, but it was unstoppable. He liked his 8 hours of sleep a night, and if he could get 9, he would certainly take the extra hour. But his energy, I've been with him even in his vacation times, his energy was unstoppable. He just kept on moving, rather like a huge aircraft carrier that doesn't seem to be moving fast but has massive momentum.
Edmund Morris is the author of Dutch, a memoir of Ronald Reagan. He spoke with us from his home in Kent, Connecticut. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.